Okay, here to wrap up KER Politics. You know, Jimmy, you and I have been trying all week to talk about China. We're going to do it in this particular segment. And the reason we haven't been able to do it during the week is there have been so many events during the week that we've had to focus on. Not to say that the situation with China isn't incredibly important, because it is. I think if the United States continues to provoke China in its relationship with Taiwan, in my opinion, I think the Chinese are going to take action against that. I think if we get any more shows of strength by the Nancy Pelosi's of the world, I think the Chinese will probably go in there and take it back over. What do you think?
I don't think it's even relevant of what Nancy Pelosi did. I think the Chinese have an objective. The Chinese are very concerned about the influence of Taiwan on mainland China and Beijing.
Right.
Taiwan has done incredibly well financially. There's only 29 million, less than 30 million people in Taiwan, Chinese. They've done exceptionally well. They've got organized society. They do a lot economically. They live very well, and they have a democracy. Mm-hmm. And that democracy is fairly strong. It's gone back and forth. The military's been involved in the past, and you know there is problems. There has been historical problems, but basically, it's a republic that's done fairly well. The potential influence from those very experienced leaders in Taiwan would completely undermine the Chinese Communist Party's control in Beijing if it started to spread, if democracy began to spread, and the idea of democracy began to spread in mainland China, which is why the Chinese government under the CCP and Beijing have been so harsh on Hong Kong and taking away the individual liberties and putting together a national security state that mm-hmm. they have in mainland China into Hong Kong. So Taiwan is a direct threat to the legitimacy and to the strength and power of the Chinese Communist Party and the existing regime that controls it. So inevitably, in order to protect themselves, they're going to have to lash out and stop the potential spread of those ideas from Taiwan. And that's why it's irrelevant what Nancy Pelosi did. What's relevant is ensuring that they know that the price they would pay by invading Taiwan would be incredibly heavy. But the problem is the world is so connected to China because of their ability to absorb capital and create this incredible manufacturing base that basically most of the world depends on now. They have leverage, mm-hmm. Tremendous leverage, both financial power. They've used that money, economic power. They use that money to sizably increase their military capacity and capability with very effective weapon systems. And they also have used diplomacy and propaganda to spread their influence around the world to ensure people understand their abilities, their strengths, and their power. And they've overtaken Japan and even the EU as the second most prominent economy in the world, on track to become the largest economy with one of the largest populations between them and India. Demographically, that is a very big problem for the Western world and the ideas of individual freedom. And unfortunately, it's inevitable in my view that the Chinese take action there as long as that regime, the Chinese Communist Party, is in power.
Well, very possibly Pelosi didn't really affect the Chinese Communist CCP at all, but I think she did. I think that show of you know, the visitation to Taiwan, et cetera, I think it did show something that Joe Biden isn't showing, and that's that Pelosi took up where Biden did not, and she did show, I think, a certain amount of strength vis-a-vis the United States towards Taiwan. Maybe the Chinese, the mainland Chinese, don't care, but I think the Democrats in the United States really do care, and I think a lot of the Republicans probably care too, Jim.
Well, you know what? I think you're on to something there, Al. I believe that the reason why Nancy Pelosi went was because the Biden administration, the Biden regime, has so many financial connections, have done so, taken so many actions that actually have supported China, mm-hmm. taking away some of the tariffs and requirements that the Trump administration put on against China. They've sold, of course, oil from our national stockpile to China. There's a lot of regulations that they're allowing to go to be bypassed by the Chinese in order to potentially make many of the regime more wealthy. And I'm not talking about the Chinese regime. I'm talking about people here in the United States. And of course, a lot of influences that really love the Chinese markets. Yeah. So Nancy Pelosi was showing strength to the Democratic base, saying, oh, we don't like China. We're going to rattle their saber in order to show something that the Biden regime has not been able to do. And that was a political move for their base, because many of the people in the Democratic Party actually are quite concerned about the Chinese influence as well. Mm-hmm. But the Biden regime has really not done much of a good job to make a stand against Chinese expansion and military threats.
Jim, let me ask you a question. When you talk about military threats, is the timing right for mainland China right now and the CCP perhaps to put its foot down in terms of some of the actions that the United States are doing? They really didn't put their foot down at all when Nancy Pelosi went over there. I mean, you know, you had a certain amount of war games, et cetera, but a communication to the United States, a direct communication to the United States was not given at that time.
Well, actually there were. There were quite a few. There were some statements from their actual public relations people, as well as state-run media, that said, one, you know, the accusation, we're going to shoot down Pelosi's plane. But they have...
Oh, but I mean, come on.
Well, we're gonna shoot... okay, that's... Yeah, you would think that would be a pretty stupid thing to do, but
yeah.
The point is, they were signaling, and they are continuing to signal. So the Chinese have built in the South China Sea in numerous areas, these actually built up islands. They said, oh, we'll never militarize them. Now they've got military positions and actually airfields on them and equipment, and they're expanding their capacity in the region. The United States has really passively not done much about that. We're going to sail a couple of ships through the strait, the Taiwan Strait here pretty quickly, I think in the next week,
right,
to make a statement. But the reality is we've been backing up, and we've been backing off for a long period of time. And we wanted to make sure that we didn't offend the Chinese because of the financial influence and actually the diplomatic influence the Chinese have gained around the world. So the problem becomes, when is it too late to actually make a stand? And that's the problem that American foreign policy makers have made for quite a long time. The assumption was that by allowing China into the markets and becoming more, you know, prosperous, that it would actually democratize over time, that it would actually take away this authoritarian mm-hmm. rule. Mm-hmm. But the reality is all it's done is made them stronger. And with technology and the U.S. technical tech industry, as well as major corporations wanting more involvement in there, they're willing to sacrifice in order to get into those markets. And they don't care about, you know, individual liberties. They don't care about the constitutional rights. And that's what we're facing right now.
Right. Jim, I want to do you a big favor right now. We've only got about a minute left, we've got about a minute 20 left, period. You wanted to bring up something at the end of the segment. Take the last minute and 20 seconds and do that.
Well, yeah, so I wanted to talk a little bit about this whole idea of corruption and, you know, talking earlier about CDC, talking about what's happening with the DOJ, talking about individuals inside the Biden regime, former Obama administration officials that during the Obama administration and after that made tremendous amounts of money and got into positions of incredible influence. People like Tom Donilon, BlackRock, an analyst team chief, you know, the guy that runs the thought process for the largest hedge fund in the world. Anita Dunn, you know, a big time advisor in the Obama administration, who's now back in the Biden administration, net worth between $18 and $50 million. And those
20 seconds.
Yeah. And these people are actually working for corporate interests that want to continue to work in with China. And that's the corruption level. And that's why you're seeing their huge efforts to undermine authority and rule of law in the United States in order to protect their financial interests. It's really, really damaging America.
And there you have it, you guys. This was fun putting the show together. We'll have another good one next week. Come on back.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.